You're listening to Solveig Spesa Musik on Radio Rakel FM 99.3. This episode or broadcast is a part of Night of New Vocalities, a little series centered around vocal music, renewing opera, but it also includes some orchestral works and some electroacoustic and electronic works by a handful of composers and vocal sound artists. Different things that they prefer to be called. But yeah, that's the group that we're working with in this little series. And my guest today is a composer, conductor, performer, experimentalist, and researcher in music. And her name is Martina Kosecka. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being part of this broadcast, this Night of New Vocalities, which is first time aired on Radio Rakel in the middle of the night. Perfect. So I'm hoping that a lot of you who listen find this as a pleasant and mysterious nighttime listening. It's really good if you're like in the middle of sleep and being awake and dreaming and... I'm hoping that, at least that's how I'm hoping that people will experience it. Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit about your background and your journey into composing?
Yeah, sure. Well, I originally come from Poland, and since being very, very small, I always thought that I have to be a composer. Not like I have to, but actually that this is the thing that passionates me. And the way of writing music and catching the sounds and starting to do my own thing, becoming alive in a way. So the first attempts to write different kind of music started when I was still a piano student. I was like 8-9 years old, and I was playing those beautiful piano sonatinas. It was so much catching and melancholic and sad. And I said to my mom, I just want to write exactly the same thing, but mine. And well, that was the moment that my fate was already, you know, signed. And I just followed the path of music and started to study composition and conducting later. So I'm quite a classically trained composer, who now expands to different kind of ways of experimenting with the sound. I studied in Poland, and then, well, I moved and been different places to finally settle here in Norway.
Great. And you have also been living in Iran?
Yeah, right? Yeah. That is quite a huge amount of time. I've been there for 4 years, all the time. Yeah.
And so how much do you like catch of the musical traditions of the country that you... that you reside in? And do you think that living in Norway is going to affect you as well, like as a composer?
Oh yeah, of course, of course. But there is still quite a lot of research that I have to do about it. And the more I discover the language, then I get better into understanding the society, the community and the culture. So it all goes together. And that was the same thing that happened in Iran. So when I first moved, my language was not so, you know, such a good level. And it's been a struggle from the beginning. But then when you start to learn through everyday situations and read and, you know, acquire as much knowledge that you have and circling around you, then you start to open up your eyes and see things from different perspective, not from the perspective of the European person that's just visiting the Oriental land, because we could call it like that. And now, surprisingly, you see it as the person that is from there.
Is that because you actually take time to learn the language?
Yeah, not only that, but the language and the people. and the way everything works around. So the communications and the small cultural things that happen between people, and also the way how the country is being noticed from outside world. Like we have certain type of stereotypes or superstition on different kind of cultures or the lands and how it is to live there and what we think the people do. And then when you go there and you realize it's completely different thing, and you actually basically learn from zero. So
that how do you know, how can a person know if your approach is deep enough and real enough? Versus coming from a Western perspective and too shallow, and like, how do you really know if it's true?
I think that it started when I had a certain expectation when I moved, and then each new situation I've been put into started to reshape my way of thinking about how I am and how I function in the new country for me. So every time I was asked by my family, which for example didn't visit Iran, I understood that I have to explain a lot of things, and that, oh, you know, for example, this actually works in a different way than you were thinking it should, like going to make some shopping, or the communications when you have a family visit, and the way that we express greetings and, for example, excuses, or, well, huge amount of different stuff. So that was the reason that I understood it's so good to enter deep into the place that you reside in. And I think with Norway, it also takes a bit time, because I'm just here barely 2 years and there is still so much more ahead.
So, have you started to feel anything yet of like getting deeper into Norway?
You know, it's funny because it's been two most difficult years of my life, I have to say, because I just moved before Corona started, and I was locked down in a new surrounding, and it was very difficult to start and understand different people and different culture and find friends. So this kind of loneliness was really grabbing very seriously in some of the moments, especially last year. But now I'm seeing the face of Norway and of life in Oslo that is totally different. It's an unveiling in a way. And I love it, because now I feel more alive than ever before.
Great. Okay, so you said that when you moved to Iran, that's the time that you met the man who was going to become your husband, and who is also one of the other Night of New Vocalities guests, Aydin. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of making this work that we are going to listen to, and how it intertwined with your life then?
Well, I wrote a piece for chamber orchestra called Aperos, and this word actually comes from the ancient Greek, meaning the endless stream of love and like passion, like an unfinished,
infinite
love and only love. So the way I was thinking about this piece was somehow to connect it to the feelings that I was having at that moment, and capture like all the happiness possible that I could imagine. And what was really passionate for me musically at that moment of my life was the way of operating with harmonic series and overtones. So I was just experimenting with the ways how to stretch different kind of overtones, like expand them And also with some mathematical procedures, see if I can move from one tonal center, from like the bass note, to another one, and how I can connect the notes between each other, so they make this continuous and endless stream of changing and morphing harmonies.
Oh, okay. But yeah. How do you extend? How do you do that compositionally?
Yeah, there are certain procedures that if you can make times the stretches if in different amount of partials, then you actually achieve different components of the inside of the sound. So like the harmonic series that you have one certain amount of sounds and they are of very exact pitch, then I just make different operations of plus, minus, times or dividing, and then I achieve totally different inner sounds.
Hmm.
So then there was a lot of work on paper and putting things together and was just calculating like what are the notes that are connecting one chord from another. Mm. So then I was just operating those tiny notes and trying to sustain them in order to morph into the next section. Mm. And there is quite a lot of glissandos that also help me to do that. So they are like the passage when you're creating and working on a certain musical fragment, and you just need a transition to go to from one step to another step, and mm-hmm. it's been very helpful in this technique and rediscovering how could I connect that and how I could make that happen. Mm. There are certain stops in the music and certain cadences that are very much rough. In a way that the tension of harmonies is very, very rough, very dissonant.
Mm.
But then there is always a moment of release. So playing with tension and release, and tension and release was like the huge flow that was dragging me in the composition. Plus the love thing, of course.
Yeah. Okay, so let's listen to it, or at least some of it.
Yeah.
Apeiros by Martina Kosecka.
Thank you.
just heard we have just heard an excerpt of Aperos for Chamber Orchestra by Martina Kosecka, my guest here tonight. And this is a manifestation or like an expression of her feelings as she was falling in love with Aydin, who is also a composer. And you also explained a little bit about how you approached making this music. It was kind of theoretical and or yeah, conceptual. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was experimental. You kind of had decided on a certain strategy, right? To
mm-hmm.
Which is very interesting. And it leads me to a question, which is how do you kind of how important is the process for you versus the result? Like, is it important for you to have the idea and then to test it out, and it's a venture and it's an experiment that nobody else has done before, and then whatever the result comes from it is interesting because it's something new, or or do you care a lot about the result? Like, do you want it to be pleasant? Do you want it to be beautiful? How much are you driven by like process, concept, theory, and how much are you driven by like the feeling and the beauty and the result, and like how you feel that something should sound, or is it a mix? I'd like to hear that.
First of all, the question is incredibly complicated, and you already put like several different kind of layers in that. So it's maybe for starters, it's very important to say that there is no 0-1 decisions whenever you're composing music, and you always stand ahead of certain set of choices, like where to follow aesthetically, where to follow in terms of theoretical part, if you have that, because it's also somehow important. Mm. And well, the form choices, like how do you want to build it up and what do you want to achieve, of course, as you're saying, so the process and result. There is also, it's kind of difficult for me to say if I want to achieve beautiful music or if I want to achieve rough music or things like that, because it's incredibly subjective. Mm-hmm. And everybody will have a different notion of that, even if I'm saying that I just wanted to make something incredibly delicate, and then somebody mm-hmm. will say like, no, actually I was feeling like I have a needles put in my head or something like that. So
from a subjective
point of view,
do you feel like you want to make something that you find pleasant or beautiful somehow, or that stirs you? Or I mean, it doesn't have to be what is beautiful for others, right?
Yes, of course. Mm. And this is the beauty of being a composer, because at the very first position I write the music that I want to hear, and I write the music that I actually hear for myself, and I imagine that.
Yeah.
And the number one rule for me whenever I start to do something, it's I'm saying like I always have to be true to myself. Mm-hmm. Because if I start to lie for music, then it's never going to be the thing that you want to hear. You always hear this kind of fake emotion, and that it's not leading towards a good ending.
Mm.
At least this is what I'm saying, and there has been a bunch of very important composers from Poland that were my mentors, and one of my favorite composers, Witold Lutosławski, he was always saying that the truth is the most important element while composing music.
Mm.
And that makes you fulfilled as a composer.
Yeah.
In order to achieve that, I am always going towards the process. And process is of thinking, even not the act of composing itself, like sitting in front of the paper and five stave and putting that, or just opening your laptop and putting that in the music notation program. It's not that part that is the longest for me. The first part is the moment of thinking, imagining, gathering a material, making a proper research about actually what I want to do right now. Mm-hmm. And it can last even months for some of the pieces. Some pieces have the idea that just bumps into your head and you know that, okay, it's really the thing that I want to do. And mm-hmm. I'm just finding a time to write it down. But some of the pieces are in need of a longer development. So you can order it. You can play with the idea. And especially if they get more complicated and the concept becomes to be incredibly symbolic. Or it's, let's say, manifesting a lot of different tiny things that you want to say. It's like becoming David Lynch movie out of a blue, but through the music. Then you really want to focus on that and make it done properly. So imagining your future listener, you can think of what situation it would put me if I were this kind of listener coming and listen to the concert. And that's the way I'm playing with
imagined,
the sound.
Your imagined listener is actually yourself in an imagined setting.
Yeah, I'm a listener in a concert hall, in an empty concert hall, sitting and trying to very much objectively approach something new that becomes a subjective feeling, of course, at the very end. So we cannot cheat that. But then I'm just feeling like, okay, where does that lead me as a composer? Maybe that's kind of crazy, but I think that this process makes me realize that there is so much more to research in music while you are working on it. And actually, last year I was making the small research project for myself that I called Timbral Micro Perspective, where I tried to analyze all the actions that I do as a composer through the perspective of playing with timbre. With the color of the sound. And that at some point I've realized that timbre can have multiple meanings for me and it can control different parameters of how I write music. It can control the forms, it can control the notions, it can control the emotions, it can control the detailed and meticulously constructed harmonies or melodies that are implemented in the flow of music. So it can be from the very small thought to a very extremely difficult and complicated thought.
And the timbre can be like in one single instrument, but it can also be like in the whole sound of like a full orchestra, or
everything. Everything, really. You can approach that through writing for one instrument, and then it starts to be a journey for itself. Because there is this kind of saying among different composers, like what is the most difficult setup to write for? And some say that it's writing for solo instrument. Some say that it's 100% writing for orchestra. Then there is another group saying, no, the string quartet, because of its hundred of years tradition, is the most difficult piece of music to write. But I have no answer for that, which one is difficult, because each one is having a different challenge.
Yeah, depends also what you want to do.
And that brings us back to the process and to the proper research, like what was my idea musically and my concept out of the music connections as well. So then I build up on that. And it's actually the way that I control the result. So this is the last part of your questions. So what is this? Of course, if you make the first part very, very well controlled, then you know what result you will achieve. But you don't have to name it in the way of choosing the simple adjectives. Like if that's a beautiful, if that's, I don't know, sad or something like that. It can be way more complicated than that. And maybe you need a whole bunch of adjectives to talk about what you feel. It's like my mom is always asking me, is it going to be weird again? And I'm saying, like, define weird, because there is so many shades of weird. And that what makes the music beautiful.
Yeah, I just mean that, like, if you just make an algorithm or throw a dice or something, then maybe you will, like, not care about or then the process or the rules are more important than the result. But here it sounds like you're having a bit of each, right? You're approaching it from several angles, and then
because of course I have some of your
have kind of imagined part of the result, but you are also open to finding new things in the process, right?
There are some compositions that I'm just calculating, doing things on the paper and analyzing, or if I'm working with the electronic music that implements more than two speakers, then I'm calculating the sound movements on a paper and then in the space listening to that. So it's quite a lot, and it's kind of technical in a way, but still I'm trying to blend both parts.
And also you're sensing it. I mean, you are listening to it and also thinking of an imagined listener which has the same preferences as you. So you're also having kind of a little bit of a distance, but while remaining true to yourself, right?
The last part, yes, but the other part about the listener that could admire the sounds the same as I do, not necessarily. Because that is the beauty of that. Sometimes I just imagine the listener as the listener, just the person that comes inside. Of course, the concert hall.
Yeah.
You, of course, always want people to like your music, but we cannot get
it. You can't please all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So actually, I am fond of every kind of opinion. Mm. And the worst thing is having no opinion. So I even prefer to have a negative opinion than no opinion, because it means that the music causes a discourse, you know. So sometimes it can hurt you, but on the other hand, it's like, yes, then it pushes me to do something else and experiment with something, some other stuff, because at the very, very end, we want our music to be heard.
Mm. Yeah. Very, very good thoughts, and thanks for sharing some thoughts on your own process. We're going to listen to some more music. It's a piece called, how do you say it, Halos? Halos?
Halos.
Halos. So, and this piece was when you were traveling between different countries, and your interest in microtonality was growing.
Yeah.
So so how did this work come into being?
That piece had a very bumpy history, because that's a piece for alto saxophone and electronics. And when I started to work on that, I was moving between the countries because of these different festivals and different concerts. So each of the parts of music that I was writing was being created in different part of space on Earth, because we can call it like that. Some was written in the air, in the plane, and some in the airport, some in some hotel rooms. So it was always traveling. It was a traveler with me. And maybe that's also the way that I called this piece Halos, which is there is a halo effect that when you look at the sun and it's extremely shining, it causes a round aureola of light around it. So looking at that from the plane, from the window, and traveling back and forth, I've just realized that this is the part of the journey that is coming with me, those reflexes that I am approaching all the time. And they are slight changes in them. So that's how I connected them to the microtonality. Because microtonality is also about slight nuances between the sounds that are very close to each other. Mm-hmm. Just the tiny pitches that are of tiny distance. And Having alto saxophone, that which is really great instrument to use. You can play microtonal scale on the instrument. I just thought like this is really great to create this atmosphere of uniqueness, you know. Mm. So I was experimenting with different stuff, and it's. I think you can hear it easily in there.
Okay, so this is Helos by Martina Kasecka. By Martina Kasecka, and it's inspired by the sun's halo as she was flying between different countries and being interested in microtonality. And we will keep the sound a little bit in the background while Martina explains some of the technical bits of the composition, because I was wondering about if it's written down at all, and Martina can explain a little bit how this is done.
Yeah, sure. So you're just hearing in the background that the alto saxophone entered again with the tape. And all the things are completely synchronized. So the saxophone part is written down, and there is a need of a click track for the performer that he or she can be in a perfect synchronization with the tape that is going from the speakers. Mm. At least that is in the concert situation.
And the tape is this kind of electroacoustic.
The tape is like super old school way of saying about the electronic parts. Also, mm-hmm. So that is electronics in a way. So it's all synchronized, and you can nowadays do this through control with one of the programs for working with sound, like Max MSP. Mm-hmm. You can build a patch for yourself where you control both the click track for the performer and the sound of the electronics. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to perform this type of music nowadays, because there are things to provide us with simple solutions to make the technical things that actually some years ago were quite complicated. Mm. And in the way, the saxophone part is all written down, and it's having a lot of complicated rhythms and time constructions. So calculating how the time flows and to calculate the rhythm altogether is very important while writing this type of music.
Yeah. Great. So we can just listen a little bit more. Okay, so we're going to proceed to another piece, and one question just in between, because mm-hmm. you're the first conductor that I have here in my show, so I'm just wondering how this knowledge, how this skill and of being a conductor, how does this affect how you compose?
Mm-hmm. Well, it gives me better control on the music material that I want to write. And of course, in the case of every composition that requires a presence of a conductor, it's incredibly helpful thing to be able to sit at home and do the conducting while you're composing the work. So you know where you want a stop, you know where you want to make a flow go faster, or where you want to slow down. Mm-hmm. It's like I'm practicing my own writing as if I was already going to conduct it.
Okay, does that mean that your notes are full of, that your scores are full of a lot of notes on dynamics and things like that?
Well, dynamic is already the part of interpretation for a conductor, and it's mm-hmm. like the one of the last things. And for the ensemble, when we're talking about that, the most important part for me when I'm starting to work with orchestras is the part of precision and making clear what is happening in general. Mm-hmm. So that is usually, for most of the conductors, that is the beginning. And then you start to work on creation and on interpretation of music. Mm. So what kind of shape it's going to have. And if you have the things that are agogics, so speeding up in music, slowing down in music, those are very subjective. And how you build them up, because every speeding up of in the same piece can be different in the hands of different conductor. So the part of the tempo is already the thing for your creation, the thing for dynamics, and the interpretation of the mood, atmosphere of the music. Mm. It's all the thing that conductor creates with the orchestra members or with the musicians that are engaged into the work with ensemble.
But some composers write a lot of notes, like they specify a lot of things, and mm-hmm. some composers maybe leave it more open. So I'm just like, what kind of where are you on the spectrum?
Oh yeah, this it depends again from the music and the piece that I'm working on. I like to control a lot of things, but there are certain pieces that are based more on improvisation, and there I rather describe the things that I want to achieve and give huge amount of different kind of elements for the performer to figure out herself or himself.
Okay.
Like a challenge.
Yeah, it's open to interpretation somehow.
Yeah. And that is what makes it beautiful, because at the very end, the certain parts of the musical material are unpredictable.
Yeah.
And each performer is going to do different things with it. And about the differences of performances themselves, even if you have very strictly precise music written down with a lot of instructions, like how it has to be properly done, still every performance is going to be completely different, because we are not computers and we will never do this like 100% the same.
Do you prefer to then leave it to an ensemble with their own conductor to interpret your music and play it, or do you like to be there, make a workshop and conduct it yourself? Like, if you can choose, what do you like?
I like to be there as a listener. If there would be a situation that my piece is going to be conducted, I like to be there and be able to give some clues to the performers and work on certain things while we are rehearsing together. Maybe that is a weird thing about me, but I really do not like to conduct my own music. I really like to be somewhere there in the audience and just hear how it shapes. I had, for example, I had one string orchestra piece performed twice by two different orchestras and two different conductors. And while at the one of the performances, I had this chance to work with the ensemble a lot and also discuss very carefully things with the conductor. I knew how it's going to be, and I was incredibly satisfied of the result.
Yeah.
But in the second case, when I came to the concert and I heard the new interpretation, it's not that I was unhappy. It was that it made me realize how different can it sound while still I was writing very, very precise indications about different elements of music.
Yeah.
But it was also beautiful. So then I'm, you know, it's a lesson for yourself as a composer. Like, it makes you double reflect on all the actions that you're doing.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great story. Okay, so let's move on to the piece called Rubai. And we can keep it a little bit in the background while Martina tells us about how it came into being.
Yes.
Ooh, we hear voices.
Yes, exactly.
Moving between the ears.
Yeah, so this is an electroacoustic composition where I'm using only the voice as a main material. It's inspired by the Persian poetry of the 11th century poet Omar Khayyam, and I recorded several of his poems, actually divided it like that there were two male reciters and two female reciters that I recorded, and I tried to make a musical odyssey of sounds, like a poetry of myself in this composition. It's called Rubai. And it means it is a quartain, so four verse type of poetry that was written in Iran, and it's written in Iran till nowadays, actually. Yeah. So my approach in this music was to interpret and write my own musical rubaiyat. So what you can hear is like I'm trying to draw different kind of accents from the poems that I've recorded, and I'm changing them constantly, playing with them, with the material that they create. But what is important for me, I stripped all the poems from their semantical meaning. So what you hear is really the Odyssey through sounds. You hear the pure poetic sound.
Oh, you can't recognize any words?
Maybe there is a like three words that if you know Persian language, then you can realize what they mean. But otherwise, no. Like this fragment of syllable that is looped right now.
Yeah.
So it's like.
Yeah, very fast.
Yeah.
I don't know which sound it is.
And now you have the avalanche of the beginning of one of the verses of the poem.
Yeah.
So it's a journey of itself.
This doesn't sound like voice at all.
No, this is mixed with some small electronic elements.
Okay. I really recommend putting on headphones now. Because it's moving in 3D.
Yeah, it's a stereo piece, and well, the thing that I really love is to play with the disposition of certain smaller sounds. Mm-hmm. It's again like micro-perspectivic thinking, because you're playing with the elements, and whenever you hear it in the space, it's also making you move, making your head move and the perspective move. But if you have it on your headphones, it's immediately different thing.
Mm. Yeah. But I sometimes find my eyes moving when I hear something that's like ping-pong between the ears.
Yeah.
I find my eyes moving. It's very strange.
It is the brain reaction and how we perceive things. And whenever you hear it approaching, it's like Doppler effect. Whenever you're approaching the ambulance that is on the street, mm-hmm. and it's coming with one type of sound, and when it passes you, the sound is the most intense, but then it leaves, it again fades away, and the pitch drops a little bit as a glissando.
Yeah.
So you follow it with your ear immediately. Or when you're hearing the helicopter passing by above you, you also try to follow. It comes naturally.
Yeah, this is very nice to listen to. Let's listen a little bit just to the music. Hello. Okay, so unfortunately we can't hear all of it, but we hear most of it, and then I guess people can find your music somewhere, right?
Yeah. I have a SoundCloud, so.
Can this be found on SoundCloud?
Yeah, this one can be Dubai. Found on SoundCloud, and it's also in a CD, so.
Yeah. Cool. So we have a few minutes left, but this was done based on like syllables, and you were processing them in different ways and playing with them, and perhaps keeping some of the beauty of the poetry, but from without any semantic meaning left.
Yeah, just from a sonic perspective.
Yeah, just like the music in the poetry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Maybe you can try to do that with some Norwegian poetry too.
Yeah. I have to listen to more and read more because it's connected.
Yeah. Well, that was really nice to hear. So you have one more piece with you, and it's called Topic. No,
yes.
Topic.
Yes.
Music of Pressures. What kind of pressures?
Well, different kind of pressures. And what I like to do was really to make it a topic.
Mm.
So. Let's like an open class discussion, an invitation to analyze some certain phenomenon.
Yeah.
That was my first piece of music that I composed in an electronic studio. And I was...
We're going way back to 2009.
Yes, yes. We're going to ancient times, at least for me.
When you were very young.
Yeah. And I was just introduced to the electroacoustic studio at the Music Academy in Krakow and its possibilities and its huge history, because it's been like the second studio that was opened in Poland during the 20th century. Well, the thing that is most important maybe about this piece is that the inspiration that I took was from one of the pioneers of electroacoustic music in Poland, Bogusław Szefer, who was a very important composer and theoretician of music. So this work that I was doing, finding different pressures, was a little bit of a tribute to him and his thoughts.
Mm. Very nice. So yeah, we're going to listen to that now, and I'd like to thank you very much for being part of Solveig Spisa Musik.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And specifically this night of new vocalities. So it's been really great to have you here. So thank you and also thank you to Gustav Esple, who is a great technician here. What was I going to say? I was going to say something else, but I forgot it. No, I was going to say thank you, Medietilsynet, for supporting this show. That's amazing. And thank you once more, Martina Kosecka.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.